member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 25th of February, Anno Domini 2017, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. But before the news, let me thank the folks at our the Rochester Professional Consultants Network, RPCN. For inviting me yesterday to give a talk on ransomware. And let me say how much I hated having to do it at 8 o'clock in the morning.
I was going to say, when I saw that post, I'm thinking, wait a minute. I know you well enough that you're not a morning person.
No.
Especially after being retired.
My heart doesn't start beating till noon. I don't do mornings anymore.
I've been still up at 8.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Still up and get up are really different
things.
What'd you
do? Just an IV of coffee on your way in?
Oh, yeah. I sat down, I started drinking my coffee, and I said, look, it's going to be about another 3 inches before I'm human, so you don't have to wait.
Don't talk to me or look at me.
That's right. And, of course, the night before, I'd actually gone to bed early, and then at 1:30 in the morning, my daughter called me. She locked her keys in her trunk in Arizona, so she was hours ahead of us. And
2 hours ahead.
And so I spent the entire time on the phone with her while she, you know, waited for the guy. And it was 2 hours of talking and upset. And she had a big symposium yesterday. So Thursday night, she was very stressed. And she locked her keys in the car. And that was the end. She just
That puts her over the top. That's a meltdown.
She was organizing the symposium. She brought in the keynote speaker. And she was giving her own speech as part of the thing. So she was super stressed out. Apparently it went amazingly well, but Thursday night was not really the time I wanted to be dad at that moment, but I did it. Of course I did it. I was happy to do it, but that's the way that was. Also, by the way, tomorrow is a big anniversary for all fans of jazz. On February 26th, 1917, 100 years ago tomorrow, the very first jazz recording ever was the original Dixieland Jazz Band. Excuse me, Jazz Band. They spelled it with S's back then. The original Dixieland Jazz Band put out their first recording, Livery Stable Blues, and it'll come to me. Oh, Dixieland Jazz Band Two-Step. Of course, there was a controversy. A guy named Joe Morton. Joe Morton? No, that's the actor. Joe Jordan. So, I don't remember. Some guy sued them because they apparently sampled a phrase from one of his ragtimes in the original Dixieland Jazz Band Two-Step. So there's a long-standing tradition of that as well, but I'm sure somebody will play those tomorrow, so you'll hear them on the air. But let's get to the news. A Google researcher has uncovered what may be the most worrying web leak of 2017 so far, possibly exposing passwords, private messages, and other sensitive data from a vast number of sites, including major services like Uber, Fitbit, and OkCupid. It's being dubbed Cloud Bleed by some, as the problem was caused by a vulnerability in code from a hugely popular web company, Cloudflare, and was not dissimilar to the infamous Heartbleed bug of 2015, although possibly much more severe in terms of potential for data leakage. Cloudflare, which hosts and serves content for at least 2 million websites, was returning random chunks of memory from vulnerable servers when the request came in. So, in other words, you would ask for some legitimate thing on Cloudflare, and it would not only give you your stuff, but other stuff that was lying around in memory, which might be somebody else's username and password.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, exactly. Plus their private data.
Oops.
Yeah. So let's say some organization that kept HIPAA data up in the cloud. Yeah. Yeah, you see where we're going with
this. Oh, yeah.
Making the issue even more severe was the fact that search engines were caching that leaked information. Another major concern was that Cloudflare typically hosts content from different sites in the same server, so a request to one vulnerable website would reveal information about an entirely separate, unrelated Cloudflare website. For example, you could have visited a page on Uber.com and a chunk of memory from a previous request response to OkCupid would be returned. These sensitive data could be returned to anyone. No need to carry out an active attack to obtain the data. Your mother might have somebody else's password stored in her browser cache just by visiting another completely legitimate Cloudflare-fronted site. Famous Google bug hunter Tavis Ormandy uncovered the issue, describing it briefly in a post, noting that he informed Cloudflare of the problem on February 17th. In his own proof of concept attack, he was able to have the server return encryption keys, password, even HTTPS requests from other users from major Cloudflare-hosted sites. In a later post, he found the issue to be even more severe. He said, I'm finding private messages from major dating sites, full messages from a well-known chat service, online password manager data, frames from adult video sites, hotel bookings, we're talking full HTTPS requests, client IP addresses, full responses, cookies, passwords, keys, data, everything. And that includes, by the way, sometimes credit card numbers.
Big ups.
Yeah.
The greatest period of impact was from February 13th and February 18th, with around one in every 3.3 million HTTP requests through Cloudflare potentially resulting in memory leak, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's still billions of hits. You know, it's 0.03% or some silly number like that, but it's still billions of hits. Google security researchers like Natalie Silvanovich believe the ultimate impact might be extremely severe. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google discovered massive web leak. Your choices are, I've already started changing my passwords, I'd better start changing all my passwords, and I'm going to hide my head in the sand. So far, I'd better start changing all my passwords is in the lead with 48% of them, 14 out of 29 votes. But of course, I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right, under fascinating stuff, the first link is the forums. The second forum link is the poll discussion. So far, at least the first item under poll discussion is 25 February 17. Google discovered a massive web leak, and there are six posts so far. One of those posts, people were saying, you know, you go to the various websites that are talking about this, the news sites that are talking about this, and they only list a few things. But there is a site out on the web, and I've linked it in here. There are over 4 million domains on Cloudflare, and any of them could be affected. 4.2 million.
They're one of the big content distribution networks, and one of their big things is protecting you against denial of service attacks. So they replicate their data across thousands of servers so that you can't be taken down. And so the error was probably replicated across thousands of servers.
Right. So if you go there, I've got a post farther down in the list. It's like the fourth post that links to that list. I forgot to put it in my original post, and I apologize. But there's links to a program for getting them yourself, for doing searching of them, or there's actually a link to the entire whole list. And Soundbites, as Archandra points out, Soundbites is not, none of my sites are on Cloudflare. So you don't get mine. You don't get my stuff. So that's not a problem. And you, of course, can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. If you want to talk about that or dang near anything else that you might find interesting.
And even things you don't.
And even things you don't. So let's go to our first caller. That would be Jacob from Ontario. Hiya, Jacob. What's up?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a situation on my computer. I've had AOL forever, and, you know, I don't want to change it, whatever. But I seem to lost all the information on my folders. Is there a way I can find it or get it back? You know, like, you know, certain things I put in the folders, but I press out a folder and it just says empty, you know?
Well, are you talking about folders inside your browser in AOL or?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Which browser are you using?
Google.
Google Chrome?
Yes.
One of the things we have seen with AOL is they haven't really kept up with web standards.
Oh, boy.
And a lot of people are having problems connecting to Google, to AOL servers, even from the AOL website and using a mail reader program.
I sent him a question about it. I never got a reply, and, you know, evidently, it's like I just had a lot of information, like, you know, like a car or certain things that I
right. You know, listen, this is your first. Hi, excuse me, sorry. I have not caught up on my sleep. This is your personal filing cabinet, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. If you sign in to AOL, of course, with your username and all that stuff, you can...
Wait. No, that's with the AOL desktop software, not the website.
Oh, you're right. That's the AOL desktop software. Never mind. Do you have the AOL desktop software?
Or you're using Google Chrome. So one of the fixes is use the other one. So if you're using Google Chrome to log into the AOL.com website, try downloading the AOL desktop software, and then that will copy everything to your own computer so you're not dependent on the website.
Well, how do I find that? I just type in AOL desktop.
At the bottom, let's see, last time I looked, at the bottom of the AOL website was a software button to download their desktop software.
Oh, okay. I can try that.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. And I used to have Mozilla, but I've been having so much trouble with them. I don't know what to do anymore. I mean, I had AOL since day one.
Right.
And people say, well, what are you doing there with that? You know, so.
No, and I get it. You're familiar with it. You know how to get around it. You're doing everything in it. I get that. The reality is, as Steve said, AOL is kind of not keeping up with the times. And okay. They're also, as you found out, not tremendously responsive.
Absolutely not.
And they got bought by Verizon. And now Verizon is trying to buy Yahoo, and we're worried that all of Yahoo's problems are going to be added to AOL's problems.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, basically, I don't really want to change it because I have cards with my AOL, you know, everything else.
I get that.
Any suggestions or just leave it alone or what?
Yeah, the problem is you either have to make a break or live with it warts and all. And only you can make that decision. There's no third route.
Okay, that's great. I'll start over.
Sorry. I am sorry. I wish I had a better answer for you, but
you can transition. So say if you get a Gmail account, you can tell Gmail to pick up all your AOL mail. So people that still have your AOL address, you can read it in Gmail until everyone gets your new email address. It's kind of like you moved your postal address. It's a pain in certain parts of the anatomy for a while.
Like your phone number, you know what I mean? You change it.
But the beauty here is, of course, you can keep both, and you can...
That's
just
what I try to do.
Well, and you can do that. So if you were to get, for example, a Gmail account, you could either forward AOL to Gmail, or you could tell Gmail to pick up your AOL mail. so people can still email you at and you never have to get rid of that AOL address. Mm-hmm. You can leave it there forever.
Okay.
Just stop using them as a service because it has problems, but you don't have to use them as a service, but you can still get the stuff from it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. You did fine. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenan, Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Ed from Henrietta on the line. Hi, Ed. What's up?
I just want to ask a quick question about a cell phone I got, that one of those ones where they give you 5 gigs. And then after you go past that threshold, it drops down to 2 and everything starts to crawl. I wondered if there's any application you know about, maybe from the Play Store. I looked around there where you could get something to circumvent that, or did they have you locked into that,
Yeah, sadly, that happens at the cell phone provider. So there's nothing you can do on your phone to change that. Of course, all of them now are offering unlimited data plans. Sprint and Verizon and all of them are all of them.
Unlimited asterisks.
Unlimited asterisks,
yeah. You get about 20 gigs, and they slow you down. They don't stop you, but they slow you down.
Right.
Yeah, I got 20... one of those, and of course you can get 10 gigs, which is not bad, but then you're getting in the range of about $60-$65, and that's kind of like, whoa. But you're right. I was hoping, I was checking today, they've got a couple things that Google has, speed up your blah, blah, blah. But I was afraid, well, if they got you blocked, you're kind of like lunch until the next thing rolls around and the start of the new month.
Okay. Yeah, they got you.
Right. It's definitely it's their ball game and their ball.
That's what I was afraid you were going to say. Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Yep.
They're all providing unlimited asterisk now, and I get it. God forbid they actually let you use their network that you're paying to use, but they get to set the rules. It is their ball. It is their ball game. So
they have said. I think it was, especially T-Mobile, it's because the asterisk is a little different for each of the carriers. They don't necessarily slow you down unless their network is busy. So they're calling it network. What's the word? They're not calling it network balancing, something like that.
Something like that.
So you're in downtown Manhattan on a busy network, you're going to get slow. If you're way out in the suburbs, you're going to keep your speed because there isn't that much contention
on the
network.
Right. I used to have unlimited with Verizon and it was great, but, apparently I just simply wasn't giving them enough money. So that changed. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ray from Webster, New York. What's up, Ray?
Hey guys. Hey, this sort of goes in with your lead story, but, got this letter from Frontier saying that, you are accessing your Frontier mail using a lower security sign-in. And it says it's third-party applications are part of what are weak. And it mentions Mac Mail, which I use. So they're suggesting that since they use Yahoo as an email platform, that I use Yahoo's OAuth. You know what the hell OAuth is? OAuth.
Yeah, actually, these days it's OAuth 2. It's the second version of OAuth. They all use it now. Google uses OAuth, it's the open standard for authorization. OAuth stands for Open Authorization. It's a framework that lets you access user accounts securely on a service. Facebook uses it, GitHub, DigitalOcean, Gmail, bunches of people.
The bigger question I have is, what system version are you using?
Well, I'm an old timer with old equipment here. I'm running 10.6.8.
That's your problem.
My mail is 4.6.
Right. Your operating system is way out of date and doesn't support the latest security protocols. So you would need to upgrade to 10.10, 10.11, 10.12 is the current version to get the most recent protocol. In fact, 10.12 we've actually seen is too new, and you sometimes have to tell it to use older protocols to access some mail servers.
Yeah, well, I guess that's where I'm out of luck because I'm not in a position to buy new computers. And
you don't have to buy a new computer. You just have to update your operating system.
Yeah, but... Yeah, but if I do that,
will take
some
it.
Of the software that I use all the time won't operate on me.
Oh, what type of software do you have that?
I'm talking about the CS2 and Quark Express.
They're ancient, way out of date, and they probably don't work well anymore either. So the bottom line is your mail is not going to be secure, but mail isn't anyway.
Well, if you are using if it's Yahoo, which I think Frontier is,
as their backend,
you can
log in
via the web
and not use a mail program.
Right.
But no, he can't because his web browser's too old. It doesn't have the latest protocols in the web browser.
And he can't download Chrome?
Nope, needs a newer operating system. All the web browsers need a newer operating system.
Yeah, it's the history of computing, just like
The price of poker keeps going up.
You can buy the software, and now you can only rent it.
Right.
And, very quickly.
Well, you don't have to use Creative Suite. You can use something else.
And suddenly, I find that when I'm using the internet, or I want to go to a site on the internet, now I often get a message that my version of Safari doesn't support what they're
using. Yes, that's correct. Your browser is too old.
Is there any work around that?
Upgrade your operating system.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's all going to come down to the same set of answers. As long as you continue to use the version of the operating system you're using, you will continue to have these problems. I'm sorry, there's no... I guess I don't know of a...
It's like using... you're still using XP. You can't upgrade to the newer browser because it doesn't work on XP.
Right. Same idea. So you can't have the newest stuff until you upgrade the operating system. But if you upgrade the operating system, then you lose access to some of those old programs that haven't been upgraded or that you did not upgrade.
Okay. I think you guys gave me a satisfactory answer.
Well, it's a horrible answer.
Not a solution, but an answer.
Right. Thank you. Sorry, Ray.
All right. Well,
thanks.
You guys make it a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Now, one thing we have seen people doing is instead of upgrading their whole computer, get an iPad. And so you run the latest OS, the latest browsers, and you know, for $200-$300 for a low end iPad, you can do that type of stuff. You need to read your email and all that stuff with more modern software instead of trying to upgrade the whole computer.
And if you need to move something from one machine to the other, you can do it through iCloud.
iCloud or AirDrop or there's a lot of different ways.
Right.
And then he's using the Adobe Creative Suite too. Which doesn't work on the newer OSs, you can move to a different program and not use those Creative Suites. And it depends on which pieces of the suite he's using. We're finding a lot of people who are just using, say, Photoshop. You can get away with Photoshop Elements, which is only $100. Or Adobe does have, he mentioned that you can't buy software anymore. You have to rent it.
Right.
But they do have a $10 a month, and you get Photoshop and Lightroom, which isn't a bad deal.
No, it isn't.
And so
in the long run, it costs you more, but it never costs you more at once.
Right. And if you're using those programs to like do jobs for customers, you just add that to the cost of the job, so that you pass the cost on to your customer.
Right. Our next caller is Paul from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Paul. What's up?
I keep getting a message from AVG that a virus, WIN32/ZPerm, is on my computer and ask me if I want to ignore it or protect me, as they say, and I do, but it's come up a dozen times or so. Always from AGV, always the same virus. I'm sort of wondering what's going on here.
All right, have you danced the security tango?
I'm doing it as we speak. Right now, super anti-spyware is running.
Okay. When that's done, if you're still getting it, did you say it was Zfirm, F-I-R-M?
Zperm, P as in Paul, E-R-M as in mother.
Oh, perm, Zperm. Yeah.
Is that one of the ones that buries itself real deep?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
We're frantically Googling. There are some viruses that embed themselves so deep into Windows that you can't erase them. You can't remove them while you're running Windows.
Yeah, you've got to sometimes pull the hard drive out, or
if you have a second hard drive in your computer, boot from it.
Or if you got another machine that you're able to hook it up and run the virus scan on that. But what version of Windows you're running?
10.
Okay.
You think I got this from Google, huh?
Well, no, there are a number of people who are having this issue, and most of them say that Malwarebytes takes care of it for them. It apparently keeps showing up, Zperm, and it keeps showing up in a temp directory. But if that doesn't, if running the Tango, which includes Malwarebytes, if running the Tango doesn't actually work, the only thing I can suggest, because Zperm is a replicating virus.
That's my sort of guess,
And so you may need to take it to somebody who will then scrub the hard drive by taking it out of your machine, making it the secondary drive in a different machine, and essentially dancing the security tango on it there. Because what happens is some of these things latch themselves onto the boot sector, and then they boot before the system boots, and they can then protect themselves from anything that happens because the computer thinks they're part of the
OS.
Boot software of the OS, and they protect it. So if you put it in as the second drive, then it's not protected and it can be cleaned out.
Yeah.
But most of us don't have the hardware to do that with. So I recommend there taking it to a reputable dealer.
Yeah. If you bring it in, then we can, we usually take it out. You know, we'll take that hard drive out. I put it onto our slave machine, and it's the second drive. So it does no squat. It just sits there and I can run a virus scan on it and quite often eliminate it.
Yep.
Okay. Now, can you give me any specific places to go? Maybe tell me offline here.
Well,
how much it's generally going to cost?
Dave at Enright PC can do it.
Yeah.
I'm
in the phone book. 442-4843.
4843. Okay.
There are also our wonderful underwriters. You'll hear them spoken about throughout the show. So any one of them would be able to do this for you.
All right.
Okey-doke.
Okay, great.
Thanks. The Security Tango, I've tried to make it as detailed and as useful as possible. But
when you get some of those other viruses
when it's a rootkit, you can't do it without taking it out and making it a slave drive. And most of us don't have the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the commercial AV programs are now coming with like a flash drive. So that you boot the flash drive, then it can scan your main drive. But that's a lot more expensive. Because they're doing the work for you. If you want to make your own AV boot drive, you
can
certainly
do that.
Can.
Sure, sure.
You know you want to.
I do want to. But, I've been thinking about doing it for Soundwaves for years, and I have never taken the time to sit down and do it.
You're retired now. You got a lot of free time, right?
Yes, 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 I do.
That's how that works, right?
Yes, I do. I've been trying to write another book, and I just haven't had the time. I keep, people keep asking me to do things for money, and so I do them.
Yes, please.
Oh, is that a, yes, it is. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenit Francesco, and you, 38 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Vic from Irondequoit on the line. Hiya, Vic. What's up?
My wife's car's got the built-in Bluetooth that she loves. And the other day, I went to text her because it's got the capability of answering text also. And when I sent her a text, well, I can't talk. The answer that she got on the screen was, can't find the phone. I mean, how could it not find the phone on a text, but find the phone on Bluetooth?
Her Bluetooth might be turned off.
And there's several different Bluetooth settings. My wife's new car has this too. You can attach your phone as a phone, as an audio player, as a texting device. Mm-hmm. And so you may have to go into the settings on the car to attach each thing separately or all together.
Okay. So if you've attached it as an audio device, you can play music through it.
Right.
But you can't get texts.
Right,
right.
Okay.
And if you attach it as a phone, you can make phone calls,
right,
but not necessarily make texts.
Right, and because texting, you know, and driving right now, they'll sit there and block that unless you have that other feature built into the car where you can actually say, no, I'm doing this voice, not sitting there, you know, playing on the keyboard.
Right.
Like on my car, it blocks, it says, no, you're driving. Sorry, you can't do any text.
Oh, okay.
So you got to check your car in RTFM.
Yeah. And they still come with manuals. One of the few things left that does.
Yep.
I'll check the Bluetooth settings in the car.
That's exactly
there
it.
There you go.
All right. Thanks very much, guys.
Yep. Good luck.
Thank you.
Take that, Car Talk.
Yeah. It's it's interesting. My wife has a newer car than I do, so she's got all the electronic gizmos and gadgets, and I know how to use them all and love them and like driving her car. She still has a hard time trying to pair her iPad so that she can listen to her podcast when she drives.
Right. I've actually almost got my wife convinced to get unlimited data because then she can listen to Laughly. No matter where she is, she likes that idea. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Spencerport, New York. What's up, Larry?
Yes, my son and his wife have a 3-year-old HP laptop that has Windows 8.0 on it, and they haven't used it in a year and a half, 2 years, something like that. And they have a need for it again, and they went to get on it, and they can't access. They don't remember the password. They've tried everything that they could think of, and it can't get onto it. Do you have any suggestions?
The official method is erase it and start over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some third-party Linux distros you can download and break into the encrypted registry. Yeah. It's not for the faint of heart and not very easy to do.
No, I Googled that and found a bunch of things on there. And, you know, some of them, they had a free program to download and try. I haven't tried it. I was just reading them. And it said that, you know, start it up in a safe mode and get in download this and put it on a USB or a CD.
Yeah.
And get in the BIOS and adjust it, you know, have it so it boots up from either the USB or the CD and then do it. But I didn't. They had something about Windows 8.0. They said that the BIOS was a little bit different on that.
Yeah, this is the problem with starting with Windows 8. Microsoft started using exclusively the UEFI type of which I don't remember what that stands for.
That's BIOS. What I recall seeing that in there.
Yeah. And the problem with that is Windows 8 didn't get it 100% right.
Right.
So screwing around with the boot of a Windows 8 machine could cause it to just completely die. Now, the real question becomes, do you need the data that are currently on that laptop or you just need a laptop?
Probably just a laptop. But if I have a capability to remove his hard drive and take any data off that and then give it back to him later. But I think he could probably reset everything or whatever you recommend on there.
Well, what I was going to suggest is if you can get the data off it and it doesn't hurt to do that. Certainly does not hurt to do that.
Yeah.
But you could then if they just need, for example, a system with a browser, you can replace Windows 8 with Cloud Ready from a company called Neverware, which turns it into a Chromebook.
Okay.
Or you can run Linux on it, which gives you a full operating system, but it's not Windows.
Right. Okay.
So it really depends on what you want to do with it. You can try those extra programs to see if you can break into the machine. You certainly, before you do anything, if they have any data they want on it, you should take that off first.
Okay.
Because you can screw up the hard drive royally.
Now, if they wanted to, if they were willing to buy Windows 10 and put it on, could now how would I go about getting that onto it?
Well, you would buy if it does. This thing have a CD-ROM?
A CD player? I don't know. They live in Buffalo, and I don't have it with me right here.
Okay, a couple of things you want
to
do.
The machine too, if it's going to be able to handle it.
Right. First thing you want to do is get the exact model number, and I mean the exact model number,
okay.
And then check with Microsoft. They have a website that will tell you how compatible that particular device is.
Okay.
And then that's step one. And if it is compatible, then you can purchase a copy of Windows to put on it and either use the you can download it, but where would you download it to at that point?
You'd have to buy a retail box
with that.
I think they come with flash drives now, not DVDs.
I was about to say, it comes on a flash drive. So as long as the thing can be booted from flash drive, which you can do in the BIOS, of course,
right?
You can then install Windows 10 that way.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, just one word of caution, and I'll tell this gentleman along with
right.
A few other folks have come to me, and they've ordered Windows 10 from Tiger Direct.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're legit copies, but when they go to scratch off the rub-off part to see your key code,
yeah,
it doesn't rub off right, and you can't read the code.
It's counterfeit.
I've had two folks...
Interesting.
Come in... And they try to scratch it. I say, well, you got to get a hold of Tiger Direct because they wanted me to do something. I go, I can't pull the code off. I can't even read it. So,
right.
You know, you got to go back to where you purchased it. So,
if you didn't pay about $120 for Windows 10 Home,
probably not legit.
Or $200 for Windows 10 Pro, it's probably fake
or
counterfeit. Okay. Or someone else is already using the code and they're trying to sell it again.
Yep, just a word of caution.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks. Good luck.
Yeah, I just found that very interesting. You know, two, and it was only, maybe a day apart or so. You know, that the one guy brought it in, and then I get
a phone
call.
That's really weird, because Tiger Direct is a pretty reputable company.
Yeah, well, depending on where they bought that supply of them,
Right. They may have been...
who knows?
Right. But you can't copy the Windows 10 download onto a USB drive, and they give you the instructions on how to do that. So if you buy it online and do a download, you can then put it on a USB drive. So that makes sense. The big thing you have to remember is that, and I've said it at least once this show already, the price of poker keeps going up.
Mm-hmm.
The ante are getting higher, and you have to have newer machines to do the things that you used to be able to do, assuming you want to stick with Windows.
And that's, you talk about the price of poker. I mean, just the operating system. A lot of folks, because I've been talking to a number of folks that sit there and say, well, yeah, I went to Windows 10. I should be all set. I go, yeah, until this summer, and then you're going to have to pay the lease fee. They go, what?
Right.
They go, no, it said it's free. Yes, it was free to download, install it for, try it for a year. Now, the rent's coming due, folks.
Right.
And you're going to have to pay.
Well, one of the things, Microsoft has said 6 or 8 different things. They've consistently said the next version of Windows will be subscription only. They have said that this version of Windows, the current version 10, will be free forever. They have also said that it's free until the next upgrade. I suspect what they're saying is you will be able to use it forever. But as these people are finding, old versions of the operating system stop working effectively. You can't do certain things on them any longer. So you may keep Windows 10 free forever, maybe, but at some point, you just won't find it usable. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Chris from Hartford, Connecticut. How are things in Connecticut, Chris?
Great. How are you guys?
We're PG.
So, since we're talking about security today, I'm still trying to use PGP with, with my friends, and it seems like it's no one's using it because, you know, admittedly it's a pain, but
yeah, it is a pain.
That's why no one's using it.
And now everyone uses Gmail with the web app. But I found, if I could mention a neat plugin for Firefox and Chrome.
Yep.
Mailvelope.
Mailvelope. Okay.
Yeah, and it adds some extra buttons to the web interface, and it'll generate keys for you, and it posts them to, like, the public key servers. So it makes it really easy for, like, the average person to use email encryption if they're interested in it.
Nice, and it is you can download it from the Chrome Web Store. Pretty nice.
Yeah, there's another one called CryptUp, which I think is only for Chrome, which I haven't tried, but people seem to like that one, too.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. If you're using Thunderbird, there's Enigmail that does pretty much the same thing, but it's not incredibly easy to use, no.
Yeah, I mean, I like that one, but you know, everyone's like, oh, I have a Gmail account. Like, oh, do you use like Thunderbird or something? No, I just use the website because of its integration with all the Google apps and stuff like that. And so I thought this was a nice way to do that.
And the big, sounds like a good one.
The big caveat is that the person at the other end also has to be using PGP to verify that your email is encrypted from you to them. And that's been the problem. Not enough people are using it, so no one wants to go through the hassle of putting it at their end because it's not at the other end. And then the other end says, no one's using it, I don't want to go through the hassle.
So when I used it, there was something where I can just search for someone's name. It'll actually go out and search like... you know, like the MIT and all those key servers, and it'll find something for you. So, I mean, it helps a little bit exchanging it, but yeah, you're right. You still have to like kind of get everyone to.
Yeah. The good news is it works with Gmail, Outlook.com, Yahoo, Posteo.
Oh, right. It's not just for Gmail. It's, I think, a bunch of them.
Right. Yep. But now, again, it is for the web-based versions of those.
Yeah.
Right. And if you are the sort of person who's concerned about privacy, and you should be, a product like Mailvelope will do wonders once you learn how to use it. But Steve is right. Both ends have to be using it, and they both have to be able to use it, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're making it as easy as possible, but it's not yet built in.
Okay, yeah, thanks, guys, for all the info on the Cloud Bleed stuff.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
And unfortunately, if you asked most people, they wouldn't care if their mail is encrypted or not. And so that's sort of becoming the catch-22, is that the people that are serious about security want to do this encryption, and everyone else just sort of doesn't care.
Right, that's exactly right.
And that's how we've talked about email from the beginning. It's a postcard. Anyone along the way could read your mail.
Right.
They probably won't, but they could.
Right.
And the big danger, especially this time of year, is tax forms. You know, you have to email your W-2 or email your forms to your accountant. Don't. Anyone could see that information along the way and get your name, your address, your Social Security number, your bank account numbers, your tax ID numbers. And there was a big mess last year. People were filing, the bad guys were filing returns and claiming refunds before you ever got around to filing your own return.
Right.
So then you file your return, and the IRS said, well, we've already paid you. Go away.
Right. It is an interesting issue. We should all be using secure email. But, of course, when the Internet was invented, there were only, you know, a couple hundred people who were doing email, and they all knew each other, and they all worked together. So nobody thought security, and they still don't to this day.
And they were all pretty honest and didn't have to worry about it.
Right, exactly. And if somebody did start screwing around, they knew who it was by name.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a tough thing. Google Gmail is already encrypted, but if you want to add that extra layer of encryption so even the intervening systems can't read it.
Yeah, many sites already are. So Gmail to Gmail is already encrypted. Apple Mail to Apple Mail is already encrypted. Yahoo, I don't think it matters because they break their encryption all the time anyway.
Yeah, that's
right. But if you're going to say from you know, iCloud.com to Google.com, it has to get decrypted to go out across the internet because there's no common standard yet.
Exactly. So
actually, there are several common standards no one can pick.
Right. If you and all your friends are on Gmail or iCloud, then you don't need this. But if you have friends across different things, and let's face it, 99.999% of us do, then being able to encrypt your mail is a beautiful thing. Enigmail is great. Mailvelope looks terrific. The problem is it still isn't quite easy because I have to figure out which is my private versus my public key and make sure that the person I send to gets the correct one of those keys. And they have to then have a way to use it to decrypt all my mail. And theoretically, Enigmail and Mailvelope do that, much of that for you. But there still is that issue of getting people's keys and keeping track of them and using them automatically. You know, encrypted mail is not as easy to use as regular mail. And until it is, most people won't encrypt. Most people don't know that they should encrypt. So right. That's a large part of it as well.
We hear stories about people who send an encrypted message, and then in the next email, they send the password. Well, that doesn't help any.
Right. I suppose it's better than sending them both at once.
Marginally, but right. Yeah.
All right, that music tells me that you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but you get to do it again because you're a slow learner. We're going to take a slightly longer break than we have been, but we'll be back with another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. You're listening to Dave Enright, to Steve Ray, to me, Nick Francesco, and we will be back with all of you with a whole nother hour of sound bites right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe.
Almost like professionals.
Almost like professionals, but not quite. But we have Roger from Irondequoit, New York, on the line. Welcome, Roger. What's up?
Nick ran into an interesting new scam this week.
Oh, good.
Older couple I know had problems signing on to Amazon Prime. The lady is sharp with a computer, even though she's in her 80s, you know, uses on-screen keyboard for passwords, that sort of thing.
Right.
But she Googled Amazon support.
Oh, yep.
Oh, yeah.
First listing on the page was fake. She called them, and they wound up telling her that she had been hacked by someone in Germany. They got her Amazon sign-in information. Yeah.
They could be telling the truth. She is being hacked by them.
Yeah.
And they also got her email sign-in so that, you know, of course, they could keep her from getting the emails about the purchases on Amazon and her American Express card.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And then the guy said, let me see if I can straighten out your computer. You have very bad problems here. You know, first they got her all frightened, and they said, no, no, ma'am, don't worry, we're going to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a remote, so, you know, God knows what they had put in it during that.
Damn.
And then the guy said, this is not something we can fix. There's only one company that can fix it. I'm going to connect you with them, which Amazon wouldn't do.
Right.
And then what she got with them, they told her she had some very serious problems. Her computer would never be right unless they fixed it. And they wanted her to send them a $500 money order.
Holy.
At which point, you know, she's, you know, finally it hit her. Something's not right here. Up until that point, she trusted them because she called them. They didn't call her.
Right.
Now,
she called me. I told her, I said, well, call American Express immediately. Tell them what's going on. I'm going to contact Amazon, see who you have to contact there. After she talked to American Express, she called me. I gave her the real number for Amazon. and they had already started charging gift cards.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, they don't
gift cards are the thing because they can't be traced.
Yeah, and they'll nail that the minute they get the information. They nail that as fast as you wouldn't believe.
Because they're trying to do it before you.
They can react to that within minutes. Minutes.
That's what it was literally.
Oh, yeah. They're getting the information. One person, is getting the information. They turn it over to another team because that's what it is. There's a tag team there. They get that information and bam, that other team is on the phones hitting those for gift cards.
Yep, Burr.
Yeah.
Well, they're even able to get into her email, into her account settings.
Yep.
So that when they called her back, on the cell phone number she had listed on her email.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, Google is usually pretty good about catching stuff like that and showing you the real phone number. Some of the other search engines will often put up the ads first.
Well, they've now corrected it, but I Googled the number she called initially. And on that afternoon when it happened, it came back as support for Netflix, support for Amazon, and a few other companies.
Somebody bought an ad that said they support Amazon, and that's made it to the top of the search list.
Right.
Yeah. It's of course, that led to I didn't trust anything to remove it, not even the Tango.
Right.
So it led to a complete reformat of her machine.
Yeah. That's the way to do it, really, at that point.
And at this point, someone hold Nick down. I'm about to praise Microsoft.
No, go ahead.
One of the options in recovery, I was worried because it was a machine that had been upgraded to 10.
Yep.
I was worried about licensing issues. I was worried about drivers because they didn't have an OEM disc.
Right.
And in the recovery, it had an option of, would you like to install a clean copy of Windows 10?
Yep.
They list the tool. I used the tool. The tool took over, did everything right up to the point where you've got to sign in.
Yep.
Nice.
And it installed all the drivers. Normally with a clean version of Windows, if there's an OEM, you got to start by loading your drivers so you can even get on the internet to get the rest of them. All the drivers, everything was there.
Nice.
Really nice transition.
Very, very nice. Yeah. Good to hear.
Good.
But, people have got to learn that if you're going to go for support, go to the company's actual website and go through whatever dance
find
they
the
put
contact.
You through Amazon. It's like pulling teeth to get through to a person.
Right.
But, you're going to get scammed if you just pick things up off the net.
Yep. I hope that they killed their Amex card.
Yeah, they took care of everything with American Express, notified all their other credit cards and their bank of the situation. She's monitoring everything on a daily basis.
Good.
Yeah.
It's just a shame to see people taken like that because, as she said, well, I called them. They didn't call me, and they answered Amazon.
Right.
Yep, because she looked up. Because we're used to looking in the phone book and getting the real phone number.
Right. And you can't do that on the internet. It's clicking an email link for your bank.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
That would be fine if I knew this email was really from my bank.
Right. No, good cautionary tale there, Roger. We appreciate it.
Just trust nothing on the net.
Exactly.
Yep. I've been thinking of marketing a new security program for only $29.99.
There you go. Called Trust No One.
A cheap pair of wire cutters.
Yeah.
You get a sheet of paper that says Trust No One. Thank you for your money.
Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work. And if you could go into a little bit of something, why spam has suddenly exploded again?
Because it's cheap. Because if I send out a million copies of an email, it's free for me. And if one person answers back, I make money.
Right. But what I'm saying is it seems like there's suddenly an explosion, that they found a new way through the junk mail filters.
Well, and that's just it. These things go in cycles. They will take out a domain name or rework their wording or whatever and send out a billion of them, and then they get blocked, and until they figure out another one, you get less spam, but they figure out another one, and you get more spam again. So these things come in cycles.
And sometimes when the police actually catch a spammer and shut them down, there's a lull until everyone swoops in to pick up the slack, and then there's a jump again.
Right.
Yeah, I think that maybe they're using something, too, like 10-minute emails.
Right. There are a bunch of sites that you can either become anonymous when you email or delay your email sending or any one of a dozen tricks that can be used.
I'll try to block the sender, and I'll get the email is not valid.
Yep, you'll never see that sender again. Yeah,
right. They've already lost their address. They've given up their address because they don't care. They've in 10 minutes they've made $100,000.
No.
So boom, they're done. They don't care anymore.
If only they'd use their powers for good.
Yeah, that'll never happen.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's part of it is that you get into places like India and Eastern Europe, you've got a lot of very well-educated people with a lot of technical expertise and no jobs.
Yep.
And a man's going to do something to feed his family.
That is exactly right. So if the Russian mafia or whoever comes to them and says, we want to put your skills to use, here's a job, you're not going to say, what's the job? You're going to say, yes.
Exactly. Well, and, especially the Russian mafia.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, you don't say no to them. That's right.
And I want to believe that some of these telemarketers that are at the other ends of the phone numbers don't know it's a scam. They're following the script just like they do for every other company that hires them to do tech support.
Yeah. Right. But a lot of them, it's just a paycheck. And that's what they got to, provide for themselves.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. All right. Thank you, Roger.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
We appreciate it. You too.
We had two companies this week get, people, company is a person these days. We had two of our customers this week got hit by the same fake Zeus virus warning. Big red screen pops up and there's a countdown timer and all your data is going to be encrypted. Don't close this window or your hard drive will be erased. And a phone number to call, and it's just very scary. You panic. You call the phone number.
Yeah, and they usually want $350.
Yeah, I see. I've always said if they'd only ask for $100 or something less, they'd catch more people.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that would be more work for them then.
Yeah, right. They want to just get like Nick was saying. They're playing the percentages.
Yeah.
Out of the few that they're going to get.
And we've joked that generally the bad guys are lazy. They they don't want to work. So now, instead of going to the time and effort of writing a virus, all they have to do is make a picture that says you have a virus.
Yeah.
And that's even easier to do. And then they sell it into the ad networks, which are so automated that it's easy to get an ad. We used to say don't go down seedy parts of the internet, the pirate sites and the porn sites and things like that, because that's where the bad stuff lived. These days, it's easy to get a bad malicious ad on CNN and Forbes and New York Times and websites get attacked all the time. And you don't even have to click anything. You go to the website and you're infected.
Well, it's called a drive-by download.
Yeah, they have hover points. And that's what a lot of we had somebody just last week say, well, I didn't click on anything. That's the whole thing, folks.
Yep,
you can get ads down on the bottom or up along the top, and they have what they call hover points. All you have to do is get the mouse.
Sometimes the not mouse even then. Those, just displaying the ad on your browser will install it.
Yep. And we still get people call and say, I think I got a virus, but I didn't go anywhere bad. Well, you don't have to go bad anymore.
No. Yeah. They can get hacked very easily.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Dennis. What's up?
Well, I got an HP Pavilion quad-core processor. The desktop PC does not have provisions for adding a second SATA drive. I want to know if I can go out and buy connectors which will accommodate the existing drive and then have an extra connector on that.
No, wait a minute.
Do you have a slot that you can plug a SATA card into?
Wait a minute. What has he got? What do you have, a laptop?
No, it's a desktop.
Well, then
it's an HP Pavilion.
Yeah,
so but it may only have one SATA connector.
I haven't seen that before. Usually
got one of the little pizza boxes, maybe.
To be more specific, there's the connector that is for power to the existing SATA drive has another connector on that cable.
Mm-hmm.
But the data connector for the SATA drive that's it. There's not another extender on that.
That's the way SATA works.
A second hard drive. I see
You cannot put two hard
drives. Ports that look about the same size as the one that the DVD drive is plugged into and the existing SATA drive is plugged into, but I don't know for sure. They're different colors, so I don't know if I can buy another SATA connector.
Yeah, you'll have to check the manual to see if those are SATA ports. You cannot put two drives on one SATA cable.
Right.
Each drive must have its own cable.
Like Steve's saying, hopefully it's not a pizza box that you have to get a half card, but even if you have to, If it's a full-size box, you can get a card that you can slide in, and that usually comes with cables for adding on additional drives.
But if you can check the motherboard manual for that computer, it may tell you those are SATA ports, and you just need to buy a regular SATA cable.
Yeah.
Okay, they look like they look the same size as the data port.
All right, hold on a second. Yeah. Dennis.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what they look like. You need to look at the manual. You can't tell by eye. You need to look at the manual.
It will tell you.
There are manuals online, but you have to have the exact model number of your machine, of your motherboard.
Well, if he says it's an HP.
It's an HP.
All right, you can go to HP, and on the underside, or usually inside the case, is the model number.
Right.
And usually a tech number. That identifies you, that particular system when it was built, and you put in that key code, and it's, you know, usually letters and numbers, and it identifies, it's a service tag number. You put that in, it will tell you all the specs for that particular machine, and
including how many SATA drives.
Yep.
And there should be a download for the user's manual that will give you a diagram of the motherboard and tell you what each of the connectors are.
Right. So without that, we're all flying blind, and what it looks like is unimportant.
Okay. I've so far tried to find that other information that you're talking about, and I haven't been successful finding it. What I do know is that I have a PCI Express 16 port that's in use for a video card, and there are two other PCI Express x1 ports.
Okay.
They're mini ports. Can I do that, something with that for a SATA drive?
But you could be spending money you don't need
to.
You'd have to buy a PCI Express SATA card.
So go to HP.com and put in the serial number or the tech number
or the model number
of that particular machine, and you will be able to download the manual, and in there you will be able to see whether you need to buy that card, which you could buy, or you only need to buy a cable, which would be a whole lot cheaper.
Okay, I'll try that again. I just wasn't successful getting. I must be doing the wrong thing, but I'll give that a shot again. Thanks,
okay,
guys.
Great. Thanks. If you can. One of the nice things about HP.
Wow. Right now, they've got a giant ad for some movie on their website, so you have to find the support button separately.
Right. We're going
to
take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you, 19 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Joe from Cheektowaga,
New York.
There we go. What's up?
Well, I'd like to do a little myth-busting.
Okay. That's on today, by the way.
Really?
This afternoon on the Discovery Channel, Search.
It's a reality show, and they're redoing myths that Adam and Jamie already did.
Right. But they're picking a new team.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, email can be encrypted,
yeah.
But there is an extension to the protocol called Start TLS, where you do that, and then you have the normal exchange of certificates, and then you have an encrypted channel to transfer email.
Right, but the email itself is not encrypted.
No, it is not. So, for example, if Gmail, somebody initiates an email on Gmail and then sends it to my domain.
Right.
It's just fine because I know Google uses Start TLS and my server accepts their certificate and that goes on.
Right.
Now, here's what makes it impractical, however. There is no way to direct the mail system that I know of that says, okay, if you don't get Start TLS, do not send this.
Right.
That's what kind of makes it impractical.
Right. There's not enough safeguards at the MUA, the mail user agent end, to make sure that either you're sending it safe or you're not sending it.
Steve Gibson, TNO, trust no one.
Right.
Encrypt it before you send it.
Right.
Right. And then send the password in a different channel. Don't email the password. Say message
if
the
you're
password.
If you're using PGP
then it's,
or GPG, which is the open source version of that, you can send the public key.
Yep.
And you keep your private key private, and that public key will only decrypt stuff that were encrypted with the private key. So you can give it to anybody. They can't encrypt anything with it. They can't pretend to be you with it. But if you send them information, they can decrypt it. If someone else sends them something and pretends to be you, they will have a different key, and your public key will not decrypt it, so they know it's not from you. So that's where Enigmail works, but what it requires is that both ends are using GPG or PGP and have a mechanism for doing that and can do it semi-automatically because otherwise it's a pain in the neck.
Yeah, that is vitally important. Like, if I want to correspond with my financial advisor,
right,
where I'm going to need to send, social security numbers and such like things, I need his public key, and he needs my public key.
Right.
You might ask, well, why? Well, encryption is no good unless you can cryptographically verify the sender. Otherwise,
right,
you just don't know. So I would have to sign all my emails to him, and he would have to sign all his emails to me, and I would have to properly verify the digital signature
yep.
of what he sends, and he wouldn't have to verify mine. The other thing I want to kind of clear up is if you're on a cable modem,
mm-hmm.
there is practically speaking no collisions happening.
Well, I will argue with you about that, but go ahead.
Is kind of the master of the whole operation. It basically, cable modems are not supposed to do anything at all unless the CMTS says so.
Until you get to the head end.
What?
Until you get to the head end.
The cable modem termination system is the head end.
Right, and then once you're past that, you're in with all the other people on that head end.
That's true.
So that's where the collisions can happen.
Collisions that occur because the modulation used on a cable modem, it makes sure it's kind of like the same as the cellular system. They use CDMA. They use code division multiple access.
I do understand that. But something has to explain the fact that when I had a cable modem, if I was on at 2 in the morning, I owned the internet. And if I was on at 9 o'clock at night, it was slower than dirt. Something was interfering.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact that you didn't have enough available time slots. There's only so much information you can...
Joe, that's a difference without a distinction then,
yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah, you're not actually getting a collision technically. But you still are slowed down. It's exactly the same result.
Just same result, different terminology.
Right, right.
And one of the things that's happened, Phil had a article about it on Stop the Cap. The CEO of Charter let it slip that there's about 500 people on each head end.
Right.
So you are sharing your internet connection with 499 other people. So if three of them decide to download a movie, everyone else is screwed.
Well, the big thing, of course, is that, queuing theory, right? Queuing theory applied to the Ethernet protocol, 802.whatever, says that more than 100 people in a segment means that you're going to start having collisions. And the farther you go past 100 people, the more collisions you're going to have or time slice issues. I just shortened that. Because we're on radio, to just collisions. And when you get to a certain point, that manifests as your system slowing down. In fact, no one packet slows down. But if you have to resend every packet, effectively your speed has been cut in half.
It's a capacity. That's gotten a lot better in the recent years where they've started using more channels and bonding yep. them together.
Yes, absolutely true. And it depends on where you are and how new your equipment is and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? But the basic idea is that, in fact, every system congests at some point. The real question becomes, at what point?
What level? Absolutely.
Right. Right. And, thank you. Yeah, exactly.
And the last thing I think I would like to bring up today is password managers.
Yeah.
With this recent cloud bleed incident, it makes it that much easier. You can go down the list of items in your password manager, change this one, log on here, change this one, log on here, change this one, instead of having to remember, oh, well, yeah, I log on to Google all the time. Okay, I change that one. Oh, I shop on Amazon. I go to Soundbites. I have a password there. You know, you can just go down the list one at a time. Tick, 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 tick. I've changed the password here, and you should be all good to go.
Yep-er. That is exactly right.
Well, thank you for your time, gentlemen.
No, thank you, Joe. We appreciate it. Have fun out there and cheat.
Tawaga?
Doggone it. Like Joe said, having a password manager makes life so much easier in so many ways. And again, there's that list of possibly affected sites by the cloud bleed virus. And so you can go through and take a look. There's a list of the more notable sites. So if you're a member of Patreon or 4chan or Yelp or OkCupid or Zendesk or one of those, you probably should change your password. Alexa has a bunch of top sites, the other Alexa, not the one from Amazon. So everything from 4chan to all top. So if you're a member of, what's his name, Guy Kawasaki's thing, yeah. He got hit. There's a bunch of those, and then for the others, there's a list of thousands upon millions of them that have been hit, and so you can download the entire list and search through it on your own. And that list, of course, like I said, is in our forum site. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. What's up, Pat?
Well, Nick, I'd just like to provide a little, maybe a second opinion on your appearance at RPCN the other day.
Be so, kind.
Thank you for stepping in at a late time. You talked about, I know mornings aren't your favorite time, but just so the audience really understands, for the first couple minutes you were spitting and sputtering, but when you hit your point, it was like the curtain opened, the actor stood up, and for the next 75 minutes, it was like they turned on the fire hydrant, and you were just bang, just go, 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 go. And you did your usual amazing job of enlightening those of us that need that kind of information. So that's really the rest of the story. I know you like to joke about mornings, but you were spot on.
Well, thank you, Pat. I appreciate that.
Like, bin, bin, bin.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that your check is in the mail. Thanks so much.
I like to promote local people. Steve, are you teasing us with the YouTube thing, or are you not doing it, or did I miss part of when you said you weren't?
No, we've been running it.
Oh, today we are, yeah.
Anywhere.
The link is on our website. It doesn't show up on our YouTube channel until after the stream is done.
The YouTube channel went back to the website. But you know what? I'll just catch a rerun because what I like to do is when I'm hearing things at a certain point, because I can't absorb all this stuff, but I'll think, you know, not that everything you say isn't golden, but, you know, there's more gold than, you know, more, better gold, let's say. And right. I'll say, oh, yeah, about 12:45, there was something I heard, or 1:30. So that's where I like to look back, most usually in the reruns rather than the live.
Right,
is,
right,
is
right.
Important. So that's what. One other thing, you know, we've got, let's see, Dave and Nick, you've been promoting the Chromebooks, and I have two of them are converts from Windows computers.
There you go.
And I think I just ran into my first problem trying the Chromebox program, the talking one.
Oh, sure.
Because the keys that you need to move around, because the keyboard is different. There is no search key on the Windows keyboard.
Right.
And the function keys at the top, there are no function keys on a Chromebook. So I'm wondering if this might be one instance where the Chromebox works, probably, maybe, really works with just a Chromebook rather than an upgraded Windows computer.
Oh, that's interesting. Theoretically, yeah. it remaps the caps lock to a search and remaps the function keys to the same things. But, of course, they're not labeled. And I'll have to look into that. What Pat is talking about is that there's a feature built into Chromebooks called Chrome Vox, and it's a screen reader kind of thing. And so, but, of course, it's designed specifically for Chromebooks, which have a different keyboard from a regular Windows-type keyboard. And, Pat, did you hang up?
Oh, no, no, I just had a cough, so I hit my cough button.
Ah, okay. It's a different keyboard from the regular Windows keyboard, so some of the things that you would expect to see there are not there. And so I haven't played with that enough to know. I mean, I've played with it, but not deeply, and so I will.
When you do, you have to imagine that you are a person that doesn't see. You have the advantage of being able to see and hit the control, whatever keys, to move forward. And then you can see, did it move forward or did it, in fact, skip over to the right column? And then imagine what it would be like if you couldn't see and you're just relying on the keystrokes to take you, you think, to the next paragraph. I could make it talk, and my wife loved the voice, but what she didn't realize is I was using the mouse. Using the mouse means you can see Chromebox as a screen reader for people that don't.
Right. And for those of you who want to look at what it can do, you can go to Chromevox, V-O-X, Chromevox.com, and there's a video and more information and all kinds of things on it. And it is built in, it looks like, to my version of Chrome. Of course, I'm actually on a Chromebook, so.
Yeah, I think it said it was going to go with Chromebook, the version 56. And when I looked at mine, I'm only on 54 because I've got the cloud ready, yeah. And you said those are always a couple versions behind,
yep,
right?
They always are.
Yeah, and you can't upgrade, that you get it when you get it, right?
Right. And I've already got it on this Chromebook, which is 55. There's an upgrade today that I haven't done yet. But if I do Control-Alt-Z, it turns on Chromevox.
Oh, yeah, it does come on all that. But anyway, again, thanks for your work. Thanks for coming to RPCN. I know all the people there truly appreciated it. And Dave, say hi to you, too.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Pat. I'll tell you what, I do love that group. It's a good group of people, and I enjoy.
I know you want them to be there 12 hours later.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem.
There you go, buddy. Okay, take care.
All right, thanks. Have fun. And Pat comes all the way from Batavia for those things. I don't know that I could drive anywhere from Batavia at 7 o'clock in the morning, but God bless him, he does. And so, at any rate, the Cloud Vox program is essentially a screen reader that comes with the Chromebook. So if you have someone who is visually impaired, but I have not played with it enough. And Pat is right. Pat's wife, I believe, is visually impaired, and so he doesn't see. He sees more about what it does than I do. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Smiley from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Smiley?
When you're over 80 and that, some of the stuff that you thought you knew were sort of falls out of your head in that, but
yeah, it's not about storage, Smiley.
That was locked out of his Windows computer because of his password.
Yeah,
isn't it possible to use a live CD of Linux to get in there?
Yeah, we
read it.
Yes,
or reset it.
Well, yes and no. You can certainly use a live CD of Linux to pull the data off it. But to log into it, you can use a live CD to boot the system, and then that will let you use tools that will crack the password database, which is encrypted.
And I just found something and sparked my memory. Who was the caller that forgot their Windows 8 password?
Larry from Spencerport.
So, Larry, if you're still listening, and why wouldn't you be?
Of course he is.
If they had their computer Windows 8 tied to a Microsoft account, which Microsoft really wants you to do, when you set up your computer, it ties you to a web account, you can go to accounts, let me make sure, accounts.microsoft.com, and say forgot password. Reset your online Microsoft account, and then that will let you log back into your Windows 8 machine if it was tied to an online Microsoft account.
If not, I do have tools.
Right.
I have a software package.
There are tools, but we don't mention them on the air.
No. This is a legit.
Right,
no, this
right,
is
right. But you legit, can use the tools, certainly.
Yes, and I had to pay dearly for it. I mean, it's not something, you know, you just, download and it's $29.95. No, this cost me a couple $100. And it's legitimate software for getting into forgotten passwords.
Right, right. So a reputable dealer like Dave can do that for you.
Yeah, there's, I'm sure some of the others.
But you're right, Smiley. If it's just, if you want to get at the data, then a live Linux CD will boot up and also show you the Windows drive. But if you want to break into the encrypted database of passwords, then that's a separate issue.
And the other thing, too, though, is if it is, like you said, and you don't really care about it, and it's encrypted, you could pull that hard drive out, put it on as a second drive to another machine, and through the second drive, you can get all the data that is on that drive.
Right.
Through another machine.
Right. But if your goal is to boot that machine in Windows 8, then you have to use one of these tools that will get the passwords. Thanks, Smiley.
Okay, have a good day.
Have fun. We like Smiley. He's a friend of the show. So it really depends on what your goal is. If you're just looking to get the data, 100 ways to do it. If you're really looking to reboot that machine as a Windows, use that machine as a Windows 8 machine, then you have to crack the password, and there are tools to do that, which we're not going to tell you about. So, so that's the way that works. I just during the break, I upgraded my Chromebook. I'm now at version 56, but of course I don't have Android stuff on mine. Our next caller is Paul from Brighton, New York. What's up, Paul?
Yeah, I've got, every time I start the computer or even after I start it, the on-screen keyboard keeps popping up on the screen. And I've gone on the net and looked for ways to get rid of it. I've followed them all, and it still ends up coming back.
Is this Windows 10?
Yes.
And do you have a laptop?
This is actually on my desktop. It's a desktop. Yep.
Well, that was the wrong answer.
Yeah, I know.
I used to have that all the time with Windows 7, the language toolbar. Would always run, even though I turned it off. I removed it from the startup items.
There's a number of sites on the web where they give you some directions. In some cases, they even resort to using the registry. I went through that. It's a very long process. I got to the point where it should be visible to turn it off, and the item that they mention is not even in my registry.
All right, listen. If you go to Control Panel,
yeah,
Ease of Access.
Okay, yeah, I've gone there. Mm-hmm.
Then Ease of Access Center.
Ease of Access Center.
Right. Then Use the Computer Without a Mouse or Keyboard. There is a checkbox for Use On-Screen Keyboard. If that's checked, uncheck it.
Okay.
So somehow it thinks you don't have a keyboard and wants to be convenient and pop up the on-screen keyboard for you.
Right.
I'll look for that.
And basically, that's designed mostly for touchscreen machines.
Yeah.
Right. So if you've got, the theory here is, if you've got a one of the convertible laptops where you can rotate the screen all the way around on the back.
Yeah, this is an older desktop. It doesn't have any of that.
Well, right, but Windows will have that inside.
Okay.
So if that Use on-screen keyboard is checked, then it will always pop that keyboard up for you no matter what else is going on. So that's my suggestion. Control Panel, Ease of Access Center,
right.
Use the computer without a mouse or keyboard, check that the on-screen keyboard is unchecked.
Okay, I'll give that a try.
All righty.
Thank you.
Yep, burr. Yeah, the beauty of Windows 10 is that there are so many different ways to do everything. The really lousy part about Windows 10 is there are so many ways to do everything, and that you can find four of them, and that fifth one will trip you up every time. So that's an issue that just has to be dealt with, I guess. I don't know what else to say about it. You just have to persevere. And, of course, call Soundbites like Don did from Greece, New York. Hello, Don. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Peachy, you?
Oh, just great.
What's up?
Is there a way to take a screen snapshot on Windows 10?
Yes.
It should be the inappropriately named print screen key.
Yeah, it should be, shouldn't it?
It doesn't actually print the screen. It copies the screen to the clipboard.
Right, yeah. That worked for me on earlier version of Windows, but it doesn't work for me currently since I've gone up to Windows 10.
Right. So, yes. Well, on Windows 10, you use Alt Print Screen.
Oh, Alt Print Screen?
Yeah. Hold the Alt key down, and that will let you take... And then print screen will let you take a keyboard shot of the currently active window.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Oh, okay.
If you want the whole screen, that's the Windows key and print screen.
Oh, okay. Very good.
So Alt print screen or Windows print screen. Now, you don't have a tablet, right? I mean, it's not a lab. It's a...
No, it's a tower.
Yeah, okay, okay.
Yeah.
That's your way.
Okay, and one other question. I'm trying to uninstall an application, but it doesn't show up on the list in Revo Uninstaller. How do I find it to install and uninstall it?
Dave, do you know?
I'm sorry, say again. I was doing some of the other stuff.
I have an app that I installed that I want to uninstall, but it doesn't show up in the list of installed programs when I bring up Revo Uninstaller.
And was this on there before you installed Revo Installer?
No, I installed it after.
Maybe it just has a different name in Revo?
Yeah, it could. Because, yeah, no, normally, matter of fact, the newer versions of Revo are even good at finding previously installed software. They've upped that. That just doesn't sound right, because if it's registering itself in the registry, that's what Revo Uninstaller catches.
Right. Yeah.
Is there within the program? Is there a uninstaller within that?
No, not that I found.
All right. Now, what happens if you go to the actual programs and features to uninstall it from there? Does it show up there?
Where is that? I'm not following.
On Windows, you know, if you go into the control panel.
Yeah.
And under programs and features.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with that, but I can check there.
Yeah. If you go into the control panel, there's an icon there that you can do programs and features, and it will allow you to uninstall software from there.
Oh, okay. I'll give that a try.
Give that a shot and see what happens.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Yeah, and does Revo still have a hunter mode? It used to have something called hunter mode.
Yeah.
Only in Pro.
And it may be that program was installed.
Yeah, they did that to Pro. I know it's not in the regular version.
Yeah.
It may be that program was installed before Revo, and so Revo doesn't know about it.
And I said it was installed after. But there used to be something called hunter mode, which would search out programs.
Yeah. So that again, that was the wrong answer.
Yeah, well, maybe, who knows?
Yeah.
So that's and of course, if it's bloatware, if it's some of the stuff that was installed with the operating system, it may not be removable. All right, back to the phones. We've got about 2 minutes left, so let's talk to Skip from West Henrietta.
I don't have much questions, but I'll limit to one here. Intermittently, I got a Win 7 desktop machine. 99% of the time, it just boots right up from being, I don't know, I shut it down at night, whatever it is, without asking for a password. But every once in a while, it wants a password, which I have no idea what it is. Usually, I can just hit restart, and it comes up without a password. This morning, I hit restart. It wanted a password again. I pushed the button on the front of the machine. It wanted a password again. So I turned the power off, waited 30 seconds, and it came up without the password request.
Well, the short answer is it's Windows 7. The long answer is, as we already said to somebody, if you set it up with a Microsoft account, you can ask Microsoft to change the password on that account.
Okay, is that account or accounts, Microsoft?
What's the URL? It should be on our
yeah, you put it on, it's actually account.live.com.
Account.live.com.
Because Microsoft can't keep the same URL for their services.
Account.live.com. Yeah. Okay, you mentioned this account Microsoft.
I thought it was accounts.microsoft.com because that's how everyone else would do it. That's how Google does it.
Okay, account.live.com. Okay, like I said, 99% of the time it works just fine without asking for a password.
Yep.
And why it would even, why even just reset would give, you know,
well, and one of the problems is that every time you reset it, you're potentially damaging the file structure by not shutting down properly. So you don't want to do that very often, or the computer eventually won't boot at all.
Or restart, I guess it is.
Yeah, you have to use the restart command. Don't just hold the button to turn it off.
Yeah, restart command is what I've used.
Yeah, okay, good.
That usually fixes it, but...
All right, we got to go. I'm sorry. We got to go. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. Seriously, you got to call earlier next time. We'll be back in just 166 hours with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe at Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to be member supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.